wake up some of those quiet listeners. It's the Ask the Pastor Hour of the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Thanks for tuning our way. We are increasingly more aware of people who listen to us around the internet. The technology of the day is simply amazing. Smartphones are here. And that means that people can pick us up on the telephone, plug in their headphones, maybe listen to us on the way to work out in California, put us on the computer there over lunchtime. So greetings to the United States of America. Can I put it that way? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What are you moving in? You got your suitcase here. You got.
I have my library. Yes. Anticipating any possible questions.
In all the proper colors, I might add.
Burgundy, CPH Burgundy.
That's the voice of Pastor Charles Hendrickson. He is pastor down at St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bon Terre, which is south of the St. Louis area here, in about, 30 minutes?
40.
45 minutes, maybe?
40 minutes.
How's everything going?
Pretty good. How can things not be going good on a gorgeous day like today?
Cardinals are in first place.
Well, you Rams know, I'm a Cubs fan, so.
Oh, really?
I grew up in Chicago.
You want to arm wrestle?
I married a Cardinals fan.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, so you've got
it's
that
a mixed marriage.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So, big weekend for you then coming up here, huh?
I wish it were.
You know, if you sweep, you're back in it.
Dream on.
Nothing like confidence. The Post-Dispatch has an interesting story today, written by Tim Townsend in their religion section. And I'll just share this with you, and then we'll get your perspectives. On the website for its culinaria store downtown, Schnucks proclaims its manager's mission, quote, "For Tom, grocery is not just a career," it says, "it's a calling," unquote. Tom Cholera has incorporated that calling with another, his Roman Catholic faith, in the form of a crucifix on a wall behind the customer service counter, opposite the new store's checkout registers. And in doing so, he's provoked questions about faith and business in the public square. Cholera has worked for the grocery chain for 40 years and said he has displayed a crucifix at two other Schnucks stores that he has managed, one on the Hill in South St. Louis and another in St. Charles. And over that time has never had a complaint. But some customers are reacting angrily to the new display. Lori Weinstock, age 40, a healthcare professional from University City, was shopping a few weeks ago when, after paying, she looked up to see the crucifix. "It startled me. It seemed so out of place," Weinstock said. She, by the way, is Jewish. She was startled enough to write a letter that was published last week in the newspaper The Jewish Light. Quote, "It would have been equally startling if it had been a Star of David or an emblem of another religion. It's grocery shopping, and it should be welcoming to all and exclude none," Weinstock said. Cholera says exclusion is not what he had in mind. The crucifix, he said, quote, "is not meant to promote one faith over another. It's just an opportunity to share a part of myself and my life with people I work hard to serve every day," unquote. Lori Willis, Schnucks Communications Director, said Cholera was the only manager in the chain's 106 stores to have requested to display an article of his personal faith. Company leaders made a decision to honor that request out of respect for Tom and his faith, Willis said. In fact, that's part of the reason they put him in charge of culinaria. He's a man of such strong faith. Who better to put in a store where so many faiths come together? DJ Grothy, 36 years of age, is vice president of the New York-based Center for Inquiry, which promotes science, reason, freedom of inquiry, and humanist values, according to its website. Grothy is an atheist who also happens to live in the building next to Culinaria. "It's just another example of the disrespect that those without religion or those with minority religions get in our society," he said. "It's bad taste and bad business. Who wants to shop where someone else's faith is being pushed down your throat," unquote. What are your thoughts?
From what I saw, and I saw the photo on the St. Louis Post-Dispatch website, stltoday.com, I saw the photo, I glanced through the article. It didn't look to me like he was pushing that down anyone's throat. his customer service counter, it appeared to me, was also his office. And he had photos of probably family members there, too. So if that's also serving as his office, a lot of people could put a religious symbol in their office, I suppose. And really, that's up to Schnucks. And if the customers don't want to shop there because of that, that's their choice.
Simple as that?
I think so. What you know, this is not Congress establishing a religion, but also we should not prohibit the free exercise thereof, First Amendment.
What if...
And by the way, today is Constitution Day. Happy Constitution Day.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I feel so much more constitutional now.
Good.
What if it happened that our Schnucks manager were a Satanist, and you looked up from your position in the checkout line to see in full view a pentagram or some other such obvious satanic symbol? Do you think you'd be talking to the people at Schnucks?
If I liked their products and their services, I'd probably shop there. I go to coffee shops. There's one right near the campus of Concordia Seminary here where I think a job requirement at this coffee shop is they have to have some body part pierced and some tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't like body piercings and tattoos, but if they got good coffee, maybe I'll shop there. But so, you know, Satanism is a little less mainstream. I don't know. Islam, what if they had an Islamic, but they don't, Islam doesn't do symbols like that, do they?
So, well, yeah, Islam has the moon and the quarter moon and the star or whatever.
But as long as they're not shoving it down your throat.
That's the issue here.
Yeah.
Because if it is a public place in which people of various faiths, even Satanists, can shop, then the presence of a crucifix is not just a cross. This is a cross with the corpus.
Right.
That could be as offensive to somebody as a Satanist symbol might be, well, maybe not to you, but to me. Or... there are some other symbols. I mean, what if he had a swastika up there? That would be an offensive symbol. And
then if they chose to do that, maybe I wouldn't shop there. But you mentioned this employee, this store manager, is a very good store manager. He's been with that company for a number of years in where the Hill and St. Charles, I think you said, mm-hmm. And it was never a problem. The reason I think is that this new location is more appealing, this culinary is more upscale, would be more appealing to single adults who live down that way, because you don't get families so much down there, which would tend to have a higher percentage of irreligious people, homosexuals, people who abhor religion in American life. I think that you would skew that way demographically more in that area.
So, have we become just too sensitive, Pastor? Is tolerance overrun us to the point where, you know, you've got, God bless you, you've got a shirt on today that says AMA 50 KFUO on it. You've got one of our Share-a-thon shirts.
Yeah.
And I appreciate your wearing that. I really do. But if that offends somebody, if there's somebody who understands that to have a Christian identity connected with it, and for some reason that they're offended by that, to the point where they might say to you, you know what, that offends me that you wear that shirt with that logo on it. There are a lot of people who would say, okay, I'll never wear it again. I just wear it around the house. You know, I just wear it in the yard. It seems to me we used to be a little tougher.
Yeah.
Than we are today.
And so it offends somebody. Big deal.
Wow. You're out of step with the current sensitivity of our culture.
The message of the...
You don't want to offend anybody, anywhere, anytime.
The passage that comes to mind about the crucifix, and by the way, you mentioned about crucifix versus empty cross. And some people get the mistaken notion that Lutherans aren't in favor of crucifixes, and it's just Roman Catholics. Well, that's not the case. Lutherans historically have used the crucifix with the corpus on it. But the Bible passage that comes to mind, and we talked about days of the week, Holy Cross Day was this past Monday, and the reading for that, let me read this, Chuck, about the cross being offensive, the message of the cross. This is 1 Corinthians 1, 18 through 25. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. So we should expect that the world is going to think the message of Christ crucified is foolishness and weakness, and they're going to be offended by it.
But which exactly seems to support the argument that you shouldn't have it at Schnucks.
But it is also the power of God to save.
If you're a believing person, that one thing you should know in your faith is that this is offensive. And
Paul says in the next few verses, he says, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. So the fact that it was offensive, the message of Christ crucified, certainly did not stop Paul. In fact, that was the only thing he preached. And that's what we preach also, because it is the power of God to save all those who believe in that man hanging on the cross.
Now, most of our listeners probably are aware that I'm kind of an old school guy.
Yeah.
And I can take a crucifix. Or if he had a Star of David up there, wouldn't bother me 2 cents.
Yeah.
There are some symbols that I think are pretty much offensive across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to consider the implications of something like that. But if you want to put up a Islamic moon and star, if you want to put up a Star of David, if you want to put up a crucifix in Schnucks, and I'm shopping there and I see it, it's not going to affect me.
If I understand, that's the manager's office space, and that it's not the store itself promoting that religion, I'm okay with that.
So, am I wrong? Am I a Neanderthal? Have I not evolved culturally and societally to this new level of tolerance and sensitivity that I have to learn, actually, Pastor, I guess, how to be offended by something like this in order to catch up with everybody else?
People think, and they've been brainwashed through public school education for decades, to think that any expression of religion in public life is a violation of the Bill of Rights, and that is exactly not true. What the First Amendment says is that Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of a religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And so for persons to have religious views that intersect with their societal and political views, that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly normal. Religious people are not shut out of public life.
As a matter of fact, I'm such a dinosaur that I kind of admire this man.
I do, too. I'd be more inclined to shop there.
It's like, now, apparently, based on what we've read, his theology, his faith is different than mine. And if he and I were to sit down and try to sort it out, we probably would have some disagreements on some things. But I admire that he is courageous about his own faith, and that he's not going to put it in the corner. He's not going to hide it under a bushel, a basket. He's, and I think that's admirable.
We get a similar argument every December, don't we, with clerks whether they say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or something like that. Same sort of argument.
Is there a way to recover that, Pastor, or is that gone forever, do you think? I mean, what happened to people who have different faith perspectives or different political perspectives? Well, I know that for people who don't have much backbone, you don't want to talk about religion and politics, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. If you don't have much backbone, if you're easily offended, then stay out of that room.
Yeah.
But people of spine, people of courage, people of conviction can wade into that situation and come out alive. You don't have to get your hair, you know, scorched just because you're talking about different faith perspectives.
Sure.
I'm for that.
Yeah, I am too. And so be ready to take any flack that comes your way. And we should expect that. We've had it pretty easy as Christians in America in the past to be Christians publicly. It's a little tougher now. It's certainly nowhere near as tough as it is in Indonesia or Sudan or places where people are getting killed for being a Christian.
Now, maybe folks disagree with us. If you disagree, give us a call. If you want to bring me out of my mid-20th century funk and bring me into the 21st century and get me all polished up where I need to be, just give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. I'm going to change the subject here a little bit. I don't know if you've heard about this business down in Florida involving the principal and the athletic director at a school down. It was not at the school, I don't think, but it was a school-related function. They just set us apparently a simple table prayer before a luncheon. Now they're charged with a federal crime. Are you?
I did not. This is the first I've heard of that.
Are you up to speed on that?
This was what, a public school, and they said a table prayer, and now they're charged with a federal crime?
Well, let's listen to this report together. This is our closer look report that we get from the Associated Press, and then I have some other printed material, too, but let's listen to this together.
A versus Grace. I'm Steve Coleman with a closer look. More than 30 members of Congress have signed a letter supporting two Florida educators who face criminal charges for praying with other adults at a school-related luncheon. Pace High School Principal Frank Lay and Athletic Director Robert Freeman go on trial today for allegedly violating a federal court order prohibiting prayer at school events. North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox says,
Mr. Lay and Mr. Freeman face penalties of 6 months in jail and loss of their retirement benefits for an innocent prayer said before a meal at which no students were present.
An ACLU attorney says the issue isn't really prayer, but whether school officials can get away with violating the court order. But Florida Congressman Jeff Miller says,
as Americans, we must fight to ensure that our rights to freedom of religion and freedom of speech are not taken away.
I'm Steve Coleman.
What do you think?
If that report is accurate, I mean, it's like killing a mosquito with a howitzer. It's overkill, isn't it? I don't know what it didn't say what the federal court order was when that came down, what it said. You know, you'd like a little more information. They said a table prayer at a group of adults at a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just think that's
a luncheon.
That's a waste. First of all, it's just a silly waste of time and
but now you have
effort.
To understand, and there are more details to this, but this was a question in this particular school district.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an ongoing thing. And so, as I understand it, a court order had been issued forbidding this kind of thing. So it's not like, you know, they were just, okay, let's
they were intentionally defying this?
Well, I guess that remains to be seen, and we'll find out from the trial whether or not they intended to defy the court order or whether they just
naturally had a table prayer.
You know, said a table prayer. Pace High School Principal Frank Lay and the athletic director Robert Freeman apparently had this happen on January 28th. Lay encouraged Freeman to lead a prayer of blessing at a school day appreciation luncheon for adults who had helped with a fieldhouse project. So, I mean, I can, if you just picture this, based on what we have, people get together, people of good faith, goodwill, whatever faith there is, and they want to take on a project. In this case, I guess they put up a field house. And so they did it. They succeeded.
The double standard is, if you recall back to January 20th at Obama's inauguration, were there not invocations at that ceremony. They had a minister come forward and give an invocation.
Of course, there was no court order in place to prohibit that.
But the double standard is apparent, and state legislatures will have a pastor come forward, a minister come forward on various days and give a prayer of invocation for the session of the meeting. So it's very inconsistent.
Now, I'm very grateful to you, Pastor, that you came to our station today wearing your AM850 KFUO shirt here. That means anybody that you may have encountered along the way this morning might have seen that. It stands as your testimony that you're a KFUO listener and supporter. But you know what? You probably from time to time, as you make your way around your busy day, wear a black clergy shirt with a collar.
Most days, yeah.
Most days you do that. This seems to suggest to me that you can't be at the luncheon. Or maybe you shouldn't, if you're shopping at Schnucks and you're wearing your identity, that you're a Christian clergyman, well, that could be offensive to somebody, like the crucifix is offensive. There's an atheist who probably doesn't appreciate that at all. Maybe you better stop wearing that shirt.
You know, it's funny you bring this up because I talked about sitting at a coffee shop. In between dropping my daughter off at school this morning and coming over here to the station, I did sit at a coffee shop nearby here, and I overheard two people talking about, and they were basically, usually when I hear very liberal people talking, they always bring up religion, even if they're talking about liberal politics. They use the occasion.
Well, religion is the problem, you know. That's where the intolerance is.
Well, and they said ignorance. I overheard them. I had to hold my tongue because I said, all right, now I am a religious conservative. Do you think I am ignorant? You know, they think it's racism and ignorance, and they have the stereotype of religious people.
I thought we were past the era of stereotypes.
I don't think so.
I thought that's what we learned from the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
That stereotyping was wrong.
They think we're all mouth-breathing ignoramuses with southern accents.
Well, you are kind of southern Missouri.
I grew up in Chicago. I'm a city guy.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that blows that theory. So, if you were the pastor of either one of these men,
yeah,
you got a member who's going into federal court facing maybe 6 months in prison because they prayed before a luncheon meal. What are you telling that person?
I'd say hang in there. I don't know that this is going to go forward or be tossed out. If I were a judge, I'd just toss it out. I know there are some Christian legal defense funds nationally, and if this got their attention, they would help them with the legal defense.
I think that is underway.
Yeah.
And of course, the complication is this. We're not talking about praying before a meal in a school-related function. We're talking about violating a court order.
Well, there was a guy who did this. His name was Daniel. He was living in Babylon. And there was what you might want to call a court order not to pray.
Oh, that Daniel was a troublemaker.
Yeah, and he got tossed in a lion's den for this.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Daniel. And James, on the other side of this break, you're listening to the Bible Study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Come on in if you have a question or a comment you want to add to the conversation. Pastor Charles Hendrickson. We'll be right back.
Medical errors account for over 100,000 deaths in the U.S. each year. Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. Startling statistics from the Center for Safety and Clinical Excellence push you to be your own health advocate. It could save your life. Hospitals are the fifth leading cause of death in the U.S., reports Parade Magazine. How do you advocate for yourself or a loved one? What questions should you ask and of whom? Find out next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer for Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine. Coming up this weekend, we'll take a look at marriage and the empty nest, how our parents can impact our lives well into our adult years, and some encouragement for single moms. That's all coming up on the next Weekend Magazine.
Saturday morning at 10:04 on AM 850 KFUO.
What good is a male wasp? Find out next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Wasp colonies in temperate zones usually wait until the end of summer to raise the male young. That's because male wasps are typically useless consumers of food. They don't do anything worthwhile in the nest, nor do they help gather resources. Female paper wasps often practice what experts call male stuffing. When food is brought into the nest, a job carried out by the females, other females will stuff their brothers headfirst into unused nest cells. Needless to say, in the typical nest, males have very short lives. The first reaction to this pattern was recently discovered in Costa Rica. Researchers from the University of Washington in Seattle have discovered a species of wasp in which the males are not only in charge, they actually help out in the nest. The female wasps still gather the food, but the males demand and get all they want, even from the queen. But the males were also observed fanning an overheated nest to cool it. They also helped remove water during a flood, and they helped take care of the larvae. The males of this species remain in their parent colony for an unusually long time for wasps. Yet, at any time, they can father a new colony. Other tropical species are now being studied to see if this behavior is unique. The Bible teaches that proper authority is respected when it comes from a spirit of servanthood. This pattern seems to extend even to wasps. Modern human culture needs to be reminded of the principle that when males pitch in and help, their leadership will be appreciated and followed.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
The Lutheran Study Bible is the first and only study Bible in English prepared entirely from the ground up by Lutherans, offering a uniquely keen focus on the proper distinction between law and gospel, shining a brilliant light on the heart and center of the Scriptures, Christ and Him crucified, risen, and ascended for your salvation. The Lutheran Study Bible from Concordia Publishing House is all about Jesus in every way for you. With over 26,500 notes, the Lutheran Study Bible has more than any other study Bible available today. These include historic Lutheran cross-references and notes dating back to the Luther Bible of 1534. It has over 31,000 concordance entries, over 880 references linked to the 36 custom-designed maps, 220 thematic articles, and 120 diagrams and charts prepared exclusively for this Bible. The Lutheran Study Bible, the English Standard Version, with study material built entirely by Lutherans to help you correctly handle the Word of God. Visit cph.org.
I think over the coming years, we're going to be busy sorting out some things here in the United States of America. And those milestones happen when a court order goes out that says, well, you can't do any religious activity, can't do any praying in the school setting. And then a couple of guys have a prayer over a meal. It's not like they were proselytizing or anything. They just prayed before a meal, and they violate the court order, apparently. That's what the trial is about. And if they go to jail for 6 months each, that will be the apparent rule that they have violated. Now, instead of giving us an example of a biblical figure who triumphed in federal court, we get Daniel from Pastor Charles Henriksen, who I'm not looking forward to that lion's den, but that's where he went.
Yeah, in Daniel chapter 6, there was a, if you want to call it a court order, it says in Daniel 6 that, then the presidents and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint of any fault or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. So they go to the king, King Darius, and all the officials agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. And so king signed the document, the injunction. And Daniel, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows that opened toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. And so then they burst in on him and find he's been doing this, and he gets cast into the lion's den. So We could use some Daniels who are not afraid.
That's not the direction that most of us are thinking. Most of us are thinking how unjust this is, how unfair this is, just on an ethical level.
Yeah.
These guys haven't done any harm here. But they may go to jail. They may go to the lion's den.
So be it.
And there are some people, Christians listening to us, who, for them, what happened to God? What went wrong? These are apparently godly men. And they're going to suffer an unjust punishment. And they haven't really thought much about Daniel. They just think that if you're a Christian, you should be experiencing an abundant, prosperous, mostly trouble-free kind of existence. They might even come to the conclusion that these guys must have done something wrong because God's letting them suffer all this.
And Daniel was spared from being ripped by the lions, but there were other people of God who were not spared, who were martyred, sawn to pieces. You know, Hebrews chapter 11 talks about those who were sawn asunder. Yeah, sawn asunder and so forth, and it could go either way. So the question is one of faithfulness then. At the same time, we should try to retain and recover our rights as citizens.
We should defend these guys?
There is a fourth commandment thing. Now, depending on what the court, we don't know enough details of what the court order was and so on. But if from the surface, it sounds like they just set a table prayer at a meeting. Big deal.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Jim, you're on the Bible study.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was, when you was talking before about people communicating, I was thinking about the, I believe it's the last chapter in the prophets, and the Lord speaks of a book of remembrance for those who think about him and talk about him, etc. But, you know, Peter also says, the Lord says in Peter to submit to every ordinance of man. So it is kind of a fine line when we disobey the federal ruling, we should fight it through the law. Because if we defy the court order, then we're standing in contempt of the court, you know. And we got to watch violating our laws in the country, but we can fight it through the judicial system. But when we stand up and, you know, mock them, then it could be, you know, maybe something that the Lord wouldn't want too. So we got to watch it. So that's my opinion. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
The verse that comes to my mind is Acts 5, verse 29. Peter said, we must obey God rather than men. So we obey the civil authorities as much as we can, but if they are forbidding us from doing something we ought to do before God, then we must render to God what belongs to God. And if that means giving thanks before a meal, then that would be it.
So we have that tension.
Yeah.
There's a clear tension here that we ought to obey the government.
Yep, Romans 13.
We ought to obey the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And the authorities have said, nope, no praying down there in this particular school district. That's forbidden. But then what you just said was we ought to obey God rather than men.
When men are telling us not to do what God tells us to do. You know, First Peter in his letter.
Does God have an opinion about the court order down in the Florida school district?
I don't know what the court order said, but if it said you cannot give thanks for your food before a meal, that's going too far. Now, if it says you can't, if they said don't impose a prayer on your students in sort of a captive classroom, well, that's a different sort of a thing. But if to have a prayer amongst yourselves before a meal, that would be going too far. First Peter says that about getting in trouble with the authorities, let it not be for wrongdoing, but by your pure conduct. So don't get in trouble with the authorities for wrong conduct, where it actually hurts somebody.
Here's Leo. Good morning, Leo. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning. Mr. Rathard, I want to thank you very much for all you do with that broadcast and with the topics you cover and that you too, Pastor, or what you're doing. Due to your good graces, Mr. Rathard, you enable me to meet Pastor Jack Struve. Oh. And when you gentlemen were talking a few minutes ago about suffering and this sort of thing, I assume maybe you know about this, that Pastor Jack had a very serious operation in Milwaukee for a hip, and he's been really sidelined for that. I talked to him this morning, and he hopes he'll be back functioning much better within about a month. And perhaps you knew Dr. Ron Feuerhahn had a serious fall and has been in intensive care out at Missouri Baptist. And then you think of your dear friend, the John Lukowski, and all he suffered through in life. And what you men say is just so true. And we try to hold all these people in our prayers and certainly your ministry. And I'll get off the line. Thanks again, gentlemen.
Thank you very much for your very kind words.
Pastor. The one I know personally in that list of several would be Dr. Ron Feuerhahn. In fact, I just ran into his wife last night, and she told me that Dr. Feuerhahn, who's a dear man, in a fall, suffered 7 broken ribs.
Oh, my goodness.
He has Parkinson's disease and had a recent fall. So, we should keep these servants of God in our prayers.
So then, as we leave this particular topic, I think there are probably some Christians, some listeners who we shake our heads, as you said. If you can't say a common table prayer at a luncheon of some people who got together to put up a field house, then you've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
And so we shake our heads and we go, yeah, that's right. And then we go on shopping or whatever we're doing. Does God expect more of his people?
Well, the government we have in the United States is the government we vote for. And so vote. Vote for people who aren't going to have a crusade of persecution against Christians, you know. So we get what we ask for in this country.
All right, here's what may be a little encouraging news, I guess, coming from New York City. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia has defended the Supreme Court's accommodation of religion in the public sphere in recent rulings, saying the Founding Fathers would want it that way. Scalia told the Jewish newspaper Hamodia, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, that it was never U.S. constitutional, social, or legal tradition to exclude religion. He said the First Amendment certainly does not mean that government cannot accommodate religion, and indeed favor religion. Scalia noted that the Supreme Court allowed the Ten Commandments to remain on the grounds of the Texas state capitol and suggested that the United States may enjoy God's protection, quote, because we honor him as a nation. We invoke him in our country, unquote. Encouraged, discouraged, ambivalent about that?
I happen to have been an American history major in college and political science minor, so I have a little background on this topic. Particularly in the Constitution. And what a day to come here on Constitution Day.
Mm-hmm.
But the principle was in limiting the whole purpose of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was to limit the power of the central government, the federal government, over against the sovereign states and the people. That's the point. It's gotten completely flip-flopped in our day to ignore the Constitution and give more power to the federal government. But even during the early days of our republic, you could have a religion promoted in a particular state. The point of the First Amendment was that Congress, the federal Congress, would not establish one religion over another for all the states. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And it was also not supposed to make any laws prohibiting the free exercise of religion. As long as the federal government stays out of that, then it's up to the states and the people.
Here's another caller at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Good morning, Rick. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning, gentlemen. Cover the last two topics with the two men praying for lunch. Covered that very well. We should obey Christ over whatever government laws or decrees or whatever you want to call it these days come down, that we should follow our Lord's written word. But the lady, the Jewish lady that was offended because of the crucifix, I think maybe a Jewish background would bring on a different type of offense than a Muslim or any Buddhist or anybody else. seeing that, always realizing the world holds us guilty for putting him there, and when can I ever live this down? Maybe had had some type of thinking that she had going on there when she saw the crucifix.
Okay.
When the curtain in the temple was torn, there was no Ark of the Covenant there. They were living a sham for many, many years. The high priest knew it, but the laity that had not a clue. And I believe that a lot of people, the blind are leading the blind, and the blind that are leading them aren't that blind.
Let's see what Pastor has to say.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Of course, Jews throughout history have been wrongly persecuted with pogroms and so on as Christ killers. And some have who have stupidly gone after Jews for that have ignored the fact that it was a Roman governor who authorized Christ's crucifixion. And here we have Roman Catholics displaying this. So there's nobody who's not guilty. I mean, Christ was crucified for my sins. So
you and I put him there.
Yes, that's right. Well, his own love put him there for us and doing the Father's will. But I understand this, too, and I wouldn't put this, you know, if it were my office and I wanted a crucifix, I would have it. I wouldn't go out of my way to put it in people's faces, but I wouldn't hide it either. Now, I grew up, it just so happens, I grew up in the most Jewish neighborhood in Chicago. Some of my best friends were Jewish. I know it's a cliche, but I mean, I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood. I love Jewish people, many friends, and so on. So I'm sensitive to that. But I cannot hide my Lord and Savior and the Jewish Savior who saved the Jews and the Gentiles, all of us from our sins, Christ crucified.
Boy, you've been all over the place, haven't you?
When I come on Ask the Pastor, I feel like Forrest Gump. You know, life is like Ask the Pastor is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, here's your last chocolate for today. This
okay.
is a story out of Portland, Oregon, and I knew this was going to happen. And I'm now scratching my head as I consider many of the fine leaders that sit in the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
An Oregon pastor has pleaded guilty to helping prepare a false tax return for a man who used phony invoices to evade taxes for his mail-order divorce service. It's another train wreck. Pastor Maximo Garza of Vancouver, Washington, faces a maximum penalty of three...
Or a Maximo penalty.
Maximum penalty.
No, or his name is Maximo, right?
Yeah, Maximo. penalty of 3 years in federal prison and a fine of $100,000. Sentencing is set for January 11th. The 46-year-old Garza is the pastor of Victory Outreach Church of Portland. At his plea hearing, Garza admitted that he provided false church expense invoices totaling more than $735,000 to William Thompson of Newburgh, who was operating a mail-order divorce service. Thompson was sentenced to a year in prison in 2007 after pleading guilty to tax evasion. Well, this pursuit of justice here, as it pertains to the American tax system, is complicated by the fact that the Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, had some tax problems.
A bit of a double standard. And Charlie Rangel, I think, too, the congressman from Harlem.
There are a lot of tax problems in Washington.
About half of his cabinet appointments were hiding taxes.
I don't know if it's half, but one is too many, and
yeah.
There's more than one.
Yeah.
So how do we explain that? We got a pastor involved. The pastor did something illegal and dishonest. For a man who's running a divorce operation, which is not all that too terribly consistent, I think, with biblical perspective on marriage. But what they did was they cheated on their taxes.
And he should go to jail for that or suffer some sort of penalty. But so should the Obama appointees who did also.
Or any Republican or Democrat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On his taxes. It's not just
Let me say this. I am very much, you know, against excessive taxation for programs that are not specified in the Constitution, all right? But even though I don't like it, I cannot claim on religious grounds that I won't pay my taxes, but because this is the elected officials we have, I have to pay my taxes. Even though I don't like it, I have to do it. St. Paul says in Romans 13 about government authorities, therefore one must be in subjection not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For the same reason you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. And this was written at the time when the Roman Empire, when he's talking about the Roman Empire. Jesus said, render unto Caesar.
The hated Roman Empire.
Yeah. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and that includes taxes, even though I don't like what a lot of taxes are being used for. I still have to pay my taxes.
Well, there are two separate issues there. Planned Parenthood gets tax money, and I couldn't be more against that.
Yeah.
But I pay my taxes.
Yeah.
It's a whole other ballgame when the Secretary of the Treasury,
sure,
or a variety of leaders in Washington, they find ways to not pay taxes, and then somehow, oh, sorry, what do we owe? We'll pay that. Okay, just as long as you pay what you owe, and then there aren't really any penalties, and there
right.
certainly isn't any jail time. How come they get to do that? And these people out in Oregon, well, you know, sentencing will happen in January. We'll see what happens. But I wonder when the trial takes place and the judge considers the evidence, if in the back of his mind he's going to be thinking about, well, you know, back there in Washington, they're pretty much into cutting corners on that coast. Maybe we should go easy on these people here on this coast.
I think the right answer is to maybe get tougher on both of them and maybe lower the taxes.
Let's take this call here as we make our way to the top of the hour. Hi, James. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning, Brother Chuck.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
We've talked about today aspects of Christian courage. So I'd like to ask you, Pastor, do you think that former President Carter has displayed this kind of strength and courage in his recent comments, considering his former office and his Christian profession?
Thank you for the question. If you're referring to President Carter's comments that the opposition to President Obama's policies, that the people opposing it are racist, I reject that view. In fact, President Obama, as I read in the news, doesn't agree with it either. For example, persons who opposed the federal government taking over health care during the Clinton administration in 1993, who are now opposing President Obama's administration taking over health care in 2009, how could you raise the charge of racism when they opposed the same plan or a similar plan back in 1993 when President Clinton was in office? So I think this is a card that they are playing to say that any opposition to President Obama's policies must be racist. I don't agree with that. At the same time, let me say there are many things that former President Carter has done since leaving office that I've admired about that man. On this one, you know, with his work with Habitat for Humanity and so on, I think he is basically a decent and moral man, but I just don't agree with this charge that if you are opposed to certain policies of President Obama, that you are a racist.
So in the couple of minutes that remain here, let's see if we can just pull all this together.
Sure.
Because we really do have a conflicted marketplace of ideas here, whether mm-hmm. a man puts up a crucifix in Schnucks or we're talking about this business out in Oregon. What you said was maybe we should punish both of them. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Punish both of them.
Justice
fairly.
Should be blind. Justice should be blind. You should not have an advantage because you're richer or have more power.
I'm beginning to think that the ship of justice has sailed. it is beginning to look, it looks more and more to me like we have lost our barometer. We don't know where north is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is truth so that we can apply that truth to the people in Oregon, to the people in Florida, mm-hmm. to the schnooks in St. Louis,
yeah.
So that we can think it through. We don't care about what's true. We just know what our own personal preferences are. We know what our own personal devotions are, and we want people to conform to that. And if they won't, then we play this card or that card in order to...
Philosophically, this is what Friedrich Nietzsche foresaw over 100 years ago, what he called the triumph of the will or will to power. That in an this is philosophical, but in existentialism or postmodernism, that it's not a guiding North Star, but it's just a hodgepodge, and it's whatever you want, and if you've got the power to get it. If you can, by the force of power, get your will through, there is no underlying truth behind it.
Now, did he just observe this, or did he... embrace this, or did he warn us about it?
He was kind of a crazy guy, but he sort of foresaw this 20th century, because that's what the world wars were about, and that's where philosophically we came in the last third of the 20th century and where we are today, from modernism to postmodernism.
So we got about a minute left here. You said you're an American history major,
yeah,
political science minor.
Yeah.
Has that helped you at all?
Sure.
In your work as a pastor?
Yeah, I think so.
How?
Just knowing how people have acted over the course of history, and also people in groups making group decisions, and being realistic about American history in particular. Yeah.
Does it give you an insight into the way human beings behave?
There is nothing new under the sun, the writer of the Ecclesiastes said.
Yeah, I can see.
It just takes different forms.
I was certainly not an American history major, but I was a history minor. And I'm fascinated by history. And if there's anything that history tells you, it's that.
Yeah.
There is nothing new under the sun. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Always good to see you. That's Pastor Charles Hendrickson. St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bon Terre here on our Ask the Pastor Hour. Good questions. Now tomorrow we'll be in Luke chapter 12, verses 49 through 53, with our good friend Dr. Peter Kurowski, pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in California, Missouri, and Gregory Alms, Pastor Gregory Alms of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Catawba, North Carolina, will be our guest on our Friday Ask the Pastor. Thanks for listening.
Listen to Chuck Rathert and guests Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.